This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, it's been a few weeks since we've gotten on the pod. We did the draft recap pod about 10 days ago. Now we're back here on a Wednesday afternoon. We just spoke to Marquise Lee, actually Patriots free agent edition. Pretty interesting video call from him, just confirming some things about the coaching staff, Mick Lombardi getting promoted to wide receivers coach. We kind of already knew that, but Lee did confirm it. But there's been some news, a decent amount of news since the last time that we spoke, Adam. And I wanted to start with the James Devlin retirement. If you want to get into the McDaniels Brady stuff, go turn on 98.5 or something like that. We're not going to get too much into that. But James Devlin did retire in the 10 days, 2 weeks since we last recorded. So just your initial thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's tough. I think we learned last year that even though it kind of seems that way sometimes, fullback isn't necessarily an easy plug-and-play position.
Yeah.
And Devlin was certainly made an art of it. And he was really good, and I think he lost a bit in the running game without him. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they replace him. As far as what he did, I mean, I think people around here have a pretty good sense of what he brought to the table. To get in the I formation is almost, it's almost like the forgotten formation and stuff like that. But whether it was goal line or just a regular I formation, Devlin was proved worth his weight, and he was a really good football player and he'll definitely be missed.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Devlin and just the usage of a fullback in general, but with Devlin, you were mentioning that it was a little bit harder of a transition to just kind of plug a new guy in there and have him play at a high level. I think the biggest thing is that, listen, when they draw it up, it looks one way, and then the defense starts moving after the snap, and things change. You know, the hand that you are dealt is not necessarily the hand that you get after the snap. So I think a lot of the transition or the difficulty for younger fullbacks, for inexperienced fullbacks, is dealing with changing pictures. So, the scheme is telling me I'm supposed to block the mic, but then the mic actually ends up moving over here and this guy becomes the mic. And now where do I go? Right. After the snap and the ball is snapped and my guy is dropping into coverage and now he's not really as much of a threat anymore. And so where's the new threat? Where's the most immediate threat? I think those types of things are difficult reacting on the fly to how things are moving and changing and defenses are playing it. It becomes a little bit confusing sometimes for some of the younger guys. And Devlin was so good at kind of just understanding information and making a quick decision or making an instant decision that was the right one more times than not. I think the other thing that's interesting about Devlin is what we were just talking about before we hit record, is where the Patriots are now going with the fullback position post James Devlin. Now, Jakob Johnson, who they had on the team last year for a few games, people probably remember, he was a little bit of the battering ram fullback type, but for the most part, with guys like Dalton Keene or with Danny Vitale, who they signed in free agency, they seem to be going with more of an athletic pass-catching type fullback that can be an impact player in more ways than just blocking.
Yeah, and it's interesting. In really all of football, you've seen the H-back sort of replace the fullback.
Yeah.
And I don't know, if the Patriots are going to, hang on to somebody as far as that goes. And there are still some fullbacks in college football. You just got to sort of look around to find them a little bit harder. But I think, it'll be interesting. You can do a lot of different things with an H-back. And I'm curious to see what direction the offense will go. McDaniels will have something creative, sometimes too creative, but he'll probably have something creative ready for that.
Right. I think the biggest thing with the fullback in the backfield, just talking to some of the Patriots coaches last year, like Dante Scarnecchia actually broke it down for me. And he said, the thing about the fullback is that it allows you to double team at the line of scrimmage, and then it gives you an extra body to go from any angle to take the free defender. So if the, you know, center and the guard are double teaming the defensive tackle, and that leaves the linebacker at the second level kind of unblocked because there's nobody getting up to him, so the fullback can kind of put himself through the line and be that guy that gets on first contact. And that's sort of the advantage of having the fullback in the backfield, is that you can double team and you can also go in either direction. You can run left or right and have that lead blocker. Whereas if you put a tight end on the line of scrimmage, you know, he's really just going his direction. Wherever, whichever side of the line he is on, for the most part, he's going to be blocking in that side of the ball. But then when you put an H-back there and you get him off the line of scrimmage a little bit, now you can do all sorts of things sliding up and down the line of scrimmage from behind the line, you know, a sift block, as a lot of the terminology is for when you come all the way across the formation and make a block on the other side. And then there's also some stuff that you can do leaking those guys out into the flats or something like that in the passing game to get them into space. So you watch what kind of, you know, what I've been watching over the last couple of days is the San Francisco 49ers and how they use George Kittle, their tight end, and Kyle Juszczyk, who's listed as a fullback, but he's more like an H-back fullback type, you know, kind of does a little bit of both. That's how I kind of envision them looking at a guy like Dalton Keene, where he has that ability to be useful in space as a receiver, very good ball carrier, very effective blocker from multiple angles, whether it's in the backfield or on the line of scrimmage. And you can get a little bit more creative with misdirection and getting guys coming from different angles and blocking people from angles that defenders might not be expecting them to come from.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so much that goes into, you know, being a fullback or an H-back or any of those things. It's, you know, it's, you can have a million different things. Like one thing that I noticed with Devlin was his angles were always really good. You know, getting the block so the, you know, the defender is, you know, on the other side of you when you're, you know, when he's going for the ball carrier, you know, his he always seemed to like get the right angle of the block correct. So even if he didn't blow the guy up completely, he was getting the defender in a bad position to make the play.
Right. Yeah, that was a big difference, I would say, with Devlin compared to like in the Landon Roberts, who certainly, you don't want to rag on Landon Roberts too much for being an emergency fullback, but even Jakob Johnson, was just that ability to square a guy up and really, whether the block was super effective or not, just getting in the way of the defender and having you be, you know, inside out, right? You know, having you be inside the guy and having him be on the outside. That was certainly something that Devlin did very, very well all the time, that you saw some of the more inexperienced guys have a little bit of trouble doing. All right, last bit of news here. Richard Seymour, Patriots Hall of Fame inductee in 2020. A long time coming, I would say, with Richard Seymour. You know, he got passed over by Matt Light, by Rodney Harrison, and finally gets in this year. I'm sure you have some good Seymour memories from the early 2000s.
I just think he was like a solid, dominant player on the defensive line that the Patriots couldn't have won all they did without. You know, I think he, you know, when he was drafted, obviously, remember there was the Ron Borges thing saying he wasn't going to be, you know, or said basically he was going to be a bust. But, you know, he pretty much immediately put those, you know, thoughts to shame. And, you know, Seymour was just a big physical, you know, guy that sort of set the tone for and was very symptomatic of the physicality of those teams. You know, he really was somebody who, you know, was just sort of a dominant defender. And I thought this year, I know that a lot of the discussion was about Bill Parcells, but I kind of thought it was a sort of a slam dunk to have Seymour be the guy this year.
I was actually really surprised that he, I mean, I'm not surprised in terms of the fan vote, but I thought that Seymour should have been in before Rodney Harrison. Also, I got why Rodney Harrison got in. Listen, the TV stuff afterwards, I think, is a big part of it. The guy that's still in the limelight, that's still kind of on everybody's TV every week during the football season, he's a recognizable figure. He's a recognizable name, and whenever you put it up to a fan vote, that's what's going to happen. But Seymour obviously had a longer career here in New England, a more impactful career, I would say, just in terms of being on all three of those Super Bowl team instead of just two of them. I think the biggest thing with Seymour, though, is that he was one of the first guys, not the first guy, but one of the first guys to really truly be positionless on the defensive line. He could play zero tech over the nose. He could play out over the tackle or outside of the tackle. He could play pretty much from zero to seven and do anything that he wanted on the in the trenches from inside the tackles. So being able to do that allowed Bill Belichick to move him around a ton. It was also kind of inviting for them to have a guy there along with guys like Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren that could really eat up blockers in the running game. And that's why you saw guys like Teddy Bruschi and Ted Johnson. Those guys had such gaudy tackle totals all the time, and it was because those guys up front like Seymour were really eating blockers and taking up blocks and taking on double teams, doing that kind of stuff. So Seymour to me has always been the benchmark for a defensive end in Bill Belichick's system. This is the guy that we're trying to chase, right? And whenever they draft a guy, whenever they sign a guy, I always say, you know, the guy that he should emulate, the guy that he should strive to be is Richard Seymour. Now, not everybody's going to be a Patriots Hall of Famer and probably an NFL Pro Football Hall of Famer as well, but that's kind of the benchmark, that's sort of the standard of that position is being a guy like Richard Seymour. So he was the trendsetter, in my opinion, for the Patriots on the defensive line, and he was kind of the benchmark as well. So a very deserving Hall of Fame nod for him for the Patriots Hall of Fame and get the red jacket at some point in August, hopefully, as long as everything with coronavirus is able to kind of go away or cooperate, I should say, with that. So it should be around August, usually, that in stadium practice. They usually do the Hall of Fame ceremony before that, so you can look for that then, and then they'll honor him at halftime at some point in a game next year as well. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of this show, the reason why we're here, to discuss some of these undrafted free agents. We went about 9 minutes on James Devlin. He deserved it. It's okay. UDFAs. This is one of the more fun conversations, I think, every offseason, every training camp. Obviously, the Patriots are on a 16-year run of an undrafted free agent making the initial 53-man roster at a camp. And we're not just talking about guys that are back end of the roster players. We're talking about J.C. Jackson, Malcolm Butler, David Andrews. So they got some names in there as well. We wanted to start with the two quarterbacks. Both of them, I think, have a very, very different skill sets and sort of different kind of career arcs as well. But let's start with Lewerke from Michigan State, Brian Lewerke, who, as a sophomore, a lot of people pegged as sort of a mid-round draft choice, a guy that might even excel into like a second or third round conversation if the rest of his career went the right way, and it just kind of didn't at Michigan State.
Yeah, and this is going back. I know I've talked about this before, but Lewerke was somebody who, when I was still down at Gillette, Hoyer was on the team. And so I went up to Hoyer and was like, tell me about this kid. And he was really excited about him. He said that he potentially had the skills to eventually become the best of the Michigan State quarterbacks that made it into the league, like Kirk Cousins and, you know, guys like that. So I've sort of been keeping my eye on him. I think, you know, the thing with Lewerke that it just gets in the way, it seems like every game he makes some really bad mistake, like some very questionable throw.
And it can snowball on him too, quickly.
It really does. And like, I think, you know, that's obviously a trait that doesn't get better once you get to the NFL. But I guess when he's rolling, like when he hits, you know, when he sort of gets going and into a sort of short to intermediate passing game rhythm, he can be pretty decent. It's just that he always seems to have that one mistake that trips him up. And I don't know whether it's decision making or vision or he doesn't see the guy, but he goes to be just, you know, he's got sort of like a jump pass type of thing that he does sometimes. But yeah, for Lewerke, that seems to be the issue with me is he just, you know, cutting down those mistakes.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is the mistakes. And there's really just a lot of skittishness and kind of uncomfortability in the pocket, especially last year at Michigan State. And maybe that was some of that was the offensive line. And, you know, the talent around him was never really that good. The coaching was never really that good either on that side of the ball at Michigan State. And those guys at D'Antonio, those guys are more defensive guys, right? And yeah, it was never really a great offensive scheme that he was working in. But I think when you watch him throw the football, he throws it nicely. He's got a smooth kind of in-sync throwing motion. The ball comes out pretty nicely. There's no hitches or glitches or anything like that in his throwing motion. He does have arm strength. He can throw the football pretty well, and he's got confidence when he's, like you were saying, kind of in the framework, in the structure, in on script. When he does all that kind of stuff and he's getting the ball out on time and the ball's coming out in sync with his throwing motion from, you know, top to bottom, the ball can be pretty, it can be a nice ball, and he can kind of drop it in the bucket down the field on deep throws. And he's got decent speed through his progressions in the underneath part of the field. And he's got a nice release, a nice snappy kind of release. Now, the issue is what you kind of said was that the snowball of mistakes, there's a lot of interceptions on his tape from last year. There's a lot of kind of accuracy issues where you see the ball come out of his hand and it's just nowhere near his target, and you're just kind of scratching your head. But I think the biggest thing is, and sort of like Stidham last year too had some of these knocks as well, is that pocket poise and the presence in the pocket and the willingness to stand behind his line, step into throws, hitch up in the pocket when the rushers around the edge are kind of closing in and circling around and there's nobody on the interior. You would just like to see him hitch up a little bit more often and kind of just make a confident throw. And sometimes you see, oftentimes you see the skittishness, you see his footwork kind of go out the window and him kind of just flailing a pass down the field and missing wide open receivers. I put something on Twitter when I was doing his thread where he's got two wide open receivers for a touchdown and he misses both guys. And it's just, those are the types of plays that you say, okay, this is why this guy went undrafted. But certainly from a size, physical, athletic standpoint, he checks a lot of boxes for an NFL, you know, pocket passing type quarterback. He actually is a little bit more athletic than I thought he would be on tape, but then he went to the combine and he didn't run very well. So I'm not sure if that was just kind of a facade or just college football at its best, but that's that. I do think he has a little bit of a feel for scrambling and for creating outside the pocket if it's presented to him. But he's certainly not going to run by anybody or run away from anybody. He's got like 4.9 speed. So we're not talking about a guy that's really a burner. The next one here, Jamar Smith from Louisiana Tech. Now, this is a guy I'm really excited about, a little bit more than Lewerke, I would say. He's got a lot of athleticism, a lot of arm talent, and really great poise movement in the pocket that I was not expecting. A much more finished product than I thought that we were getting ourselves into.
Yeah, it's funny. I watch him, and he's not like far off from a lot of the quarterbacks we studied who got drafted.
No.
You know, like his arm strength's pretty good.
His upside, you know, I think, is a lot higher than some of the guys that got drafted.
100%. Like, I think, you know, one of the things I like about him is he's good with the safe throws like most quarterbacks are, but he's also not afraid to take a shot and give his receiver a 50-50 chance. He's not, you know, like, I just feel like he's got that, like, I'm not saying he's a gunslinger or anything like that, but, like, you know, he's not afraid to take a chance, you know, and I like him a lot. I think he can hit a lot of different spots on the field with the ball. And I think he's just a pretty good player. I was pleasantly surprised by watching this film.
Me too. I thought that we were getting into a potential position change type prospect or a scout team quarterback. Somebody who's just here to kind of mimic athletic quarterbacks, running quarterbacks. That's not it at all. I think Jamar Smith can really play. I think this is a guy that has a chance of making the 53 as a third quarterback on the roster. I think that one of the things that, as I was mentioning off the top of his kind of spiel here, is that the pocket movement is very, very impressive. Something I was not expecting to see, where he has that kind of spatial awareness and sixth sense for finding those soft spots in the pocket, getting his feet there, resetting, and then firing down the field, and always keeping his eyes down the field and always working to find space for himself to operate so that he can make throws and not necessarily just succumb to scrambling all the time. And the other thing that I really liked about him was how he threw with anticipation outside the numbers, you know, corner routes, digs, comebacks, everything is coming out before the receiver is coming out of his breaks. And that gives him sort of a leg up in terms of, you know, where the ball is going to be and giving the receivers the opportunity to maybe create after the catch in some situations too, because the ball's on them immediately, so they can then go ahead and make moves after that. And then he's got some pretty good mobility and kind of playmaking skills and improv skills. I'm sure you watched the LSU game, which was kind of up and down. You know, there were some goods and some bad there, and that's sort of the jury on his entire career, is that he was pretty inconsistent. You know, one game he looks like a third round pick, the next game he looks like an undrafted free agent. So that's sort of what the big knock on him from his playing style is that he's just one game there, one game not. But his ability to create off script and stuff like that, I think, was really impressive. Get outside the pocket. He made a throw against LSU that was incredible. He came outside the pocket, rolled outside to his right, and threw an absolute dime, you know, 40, 50 yards down the field to a receiver on his back shoulder with a defender draped all over him. If someone like a Jordan Love or Justin Herbert had made that throw, then we're sitting here talking about how they're a top 10 pick in the draft, right? So he definitely has some of those moments. The consistency issues is really his big problem right now. There was also a 2-game suspension last year, which with the quarterback position, that's going to get you docked. It wasn't that big of a deal, but teams don't want their quarterbacks getting suspended. They're supposed to be the leaders of the team, the captains, the guys setting an example. So you never really want to see that. I think the biggest thing with him moving forward to kind of get to his ceiling, because his ceiling is pretty high. I truly think that he has like a Tyrod Taylor type ceiling to him. But the hardest part for him is going to be maybe getting a little bit faster through his progressions, not holding the ball or bailing early on concepts and letting things play out a little bit longer. Sometimes he kind of has a propensity to one read and then he's out the pocket, or he doesn't see the look that he wants to see pre-snap and he scrambles a little bit too soon. But I think that if he can get more consistent overall and sharpen up some of those things, then he has a really good chance to maybe eventually even be not a starter, but kind of like a Tyrod type, who's a spot starter, solid backup, that kind of player. And I think the Patriots got somebody here with Jamar Smith that a lot of people, including myself, right away thought, okay, you know, really this is a camp arm. I don't think that that's the situation here.
Yeah, and I think some of my favorite games to watch when evaluating a prospect or when he's on a team that's way overmatched, and just to see how they do, like, especially with the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You see how they fight sometimes. I mean, that was one of the LSU tape with Patrick Mahomes and Texas Tech was another example of that. But in that game, he had them, he brought them back to within like two touchdowns in the second half.
That game was way closer than people expected.
Exactly. And so that's cool. You know, you always like to see a guy be able to battle against a defense that has like a million different NFL players on it.
Exactly.
But you know, and the other thing too is like, I feel like sometimes coaches encourage it in college when the play isn't there to take off. You know, or even after one read, like sometimes like it's just go. But you know, I think he's, you know, like I said, the thing I like about him is his attitude. You know, like he's got the arm and he's like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, protect it against, you know, a good defense. I'm going to challenge them. And so I like that. I like the fact that he can be good on the short and intermediate routes, but he also, you know, sort of loves taking it deep. And, you know, for a guy that's being picked up as an undrafted free agent, I mean, he's about as good as it gets as a quarterback, right? I mean, he really has a lot of skill and somebody that can, you know, challenge guys at camp.
I was going back and forth with Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus on Twitter about Jamar Smith, because Sam's guy, loves Jamar Smith. And he just said to me, he was like, this guy's got more potential and more upside than 90% of the quarterbacks that were drafted after the third round. You know, guys like Fromm, guys like Cole McDonald, like he said, I would have taken Jamar Smith over all of these guys.
Yeah.
So that kind of tells you what kind of upside this player has.
If he went to Georgia, people would be, you right. know, like all over him like they were with that. So, but you're right. Like, you look at a guy like Fromm doesn't have this guy's arm talent.
No.
For sure. And he's got a lot of good qualities anyway.
Right. I mean, like guys like Fromm or Nate Stanley gets drafted. DeMar Smith. You know, there's some guys out there that just didn't have the functional athleticism and arm strength and just talent overall, like a DeMar Smith. And he went to Louisiana Tech, won 3 straight bowl games with him at quarterback. Yeah. He had a very good record as a starter, has a very good TD to INT ratio as a starter, takes care of the football. There's a lot to really, really like about him. And once he kind of gets through the progression a little bit cleaner, I think that he's going to be a better overall passer. I think the biggest thing, you know, I agree with you that a lot of college coaches just say, just go. But I think the biggest thing is that he was looking at structures pre-snap, and he was saying, okay, this is cover two. I think it's cover two. And then it ends up being two-man or ends up being quarters or something like that. And he has a struggle to adjust to that, right? So when the post-snap picture changes, now what are my best options? That's sort of the next step for him, is when they rotate those coverages, which they'll do plenty in the NFL. How does he react to it at that point? Let's talk about Jeff Thomas. This guy's the hero of all Patriots Twitter. Everybody has him pegged as the next big thing for New England. Wide receiver out of Miami. Absolute bursty, blur, accelerator, speed demon, whatever kind of word you want to use. The guy can fly.
Yeah, and I think that's what got I think that's what has everybody excited. Like, right here, oh, we got an actual speed guy here, you know, like, and so, you know, they didn't draft a wide receiver, but I still think the level of excitement about him is kind of what you would think it would be.
Right.
One of the things I liked when I turned on his film is that he loves to block. Like,
yeah.
Like he really gets after it, man. And I know this is, you know, separate than, you know, catching the ball and all that stuff, but I just think that could have been something the Patriots, you know, liked when they watched this film too. He just really gets after it. And I think that's, for a guy who's not huge, you know, you want a guy with that attitude. And I think, you know, just look like the speed. It's an exciting thing to have. I mean, you know, where would he, I also think that, like, he could be fine on the outside or in the slot. I think, you know, I don't know where they would project him, but I think he's got some scheme versatility when it comes to that. And, you know, I mean, hey, you know, if he, you know, I think he will be somebody, depending on what camp looks like, but I think, you know, he'd be somebody that's, like, really got eyes on him during camp and just to see what he can do.
He is going to be the guy in August, assuming there is a regular August, where we're all tweeting, we're all talking about him, and he's putting on an absolute show. I have no doubts about that. I think the biggest thing about Jeff Thomas that I was impressed about, it's kind of similar, and I'm not saying that he's going to be Tyreek Hill, so don't take this the wrong way, people, but it's kind of similarly like Tyreek Hill, that even though he's smaller, even though he's 5'8", 185 pounds, he's a physical guy. He he's a thick, well-built player, and he doesn't play or kind of, he doesn't look like he's that size. He looks bigger because he plays bigger. So I think that that's a nice thing about him, is when you see Tyreek Hill's speed on TV, I get that. But when you watch him up close and you watch him live, you see that it's not just speed, it's a physical speed. It's a different sort of speed. I can't really describe it very well, but it's how all good NFL players and NFL receivers that are fast win with their speed. It's not just like, you know, he's not soft. He's a very hard player, very hard-nosed player. The other thing I think that stands out to me, too, is that he's pretty loose also. So he's not a stiff or rigid mover. I think that when you look at sort of where the Patriots are going with that Philip Dorsett role, they had a guy like Philip Dorsett who was great in a straight line. You have him run a go, you have him run a post, you have him run an over route, you have him run a comeback off of those things, and he can attack blind spots and use his speed to get open down the field pretty productively. Okay, that's great. But this guy, Jeff Thomas, similarly to him like Damari Bird, who they signed in free agency, they have wiggle. They can open up their hips and unlock their hips, and they can come out of a break. They can cut at the top of the route and create separation. They can create with the ball in their hands after the catch. That was another thing that Philip Dorsett never really kind of developed in his game, because he was a linear athlete. He's not the type of guy that can jump cut and make guys miss and spin and make plays after the catch as well. So Jeff Thomas is a three-level threat to me. He's a guy that you can throw a screen to, and he'll run with it, and he'll create something out of it. Then you can throw him a crosser at the intermediate level, like an over route from the slot, and he'll be fine there too and provide sort of a horizontal stretch to the defense. And then he's obviously got the 4-4 speed to take the top off too. So just a little bit looser of an athlete, a little bit more of a flexible guy that's not quite as linear as a Philip Dorsett. I think that's sort of what they're looking for, is someone that can be a threat at all three levels of the defense as well as take the top off, and also have a little bit more movement skills to create after the catch and be a little bit more snappy at the top of the route to create separation.
Yeah, it's funny. He does really just have that that feel of a guy who's gonna have like blow up in the preseason games, like him and Jamar Smith or anybody really. You're kind of rooting for it, and I think that I think it's good to have someone to be excited over in the undrafted, because they didn't obviously draft a wide receiver. But this is a guy that could make the team. He's got the skills to do it. He's got the speed. And he's, again, it's another guy whose attitude you like, because, you know, like you said, he's physical. Like, when he blocks, he really puts his heart and soul into it. And it's it makes for an entertaining guy to watch.
And after the catch, too, you know, he takes a screen, and he's a tough guy to bring down, not because he's just because he's elusive, but also because he's a sturdy ball carrier, too. I mean, he's not quite N'Keal Harry in that respect, but he has that ability to kind of run through weaker tackles. Now, we do have to mention the suspensions. That's why he went undrafted. So he probably would have been like a third or fourth round pick, Thomas, if he didn't have all the suspensions or all the off-field turmoil. He gets kicked off the team in 2018 by then head coach Mark Reich down in Miami, which was, it was a mess of a regime under Reich. So to be fair to Jeff Thomas, the offense was a mess. The coaching staff was a mess, but he got kicked off the team in 2018 for rules violations. He came back under Manny Diaz in 2019 and got suspended for two more games in 2019 for same kind of stuff, you know, off-field concerns, you know, red flags, character issues. So that's the question, is can you get Jeff Thomas to buy in? Because I don't think any scout or any coach that's seen this guy play has any doubt that he can play football or how talented he is. The question really is going to be, can you get him to buy into the program and get him to stay here and stay bought into the program? You know, it's not the same as like a drug history like Josh Gordon. Maybe it's closer to like an Antonio Brown situation, you know, where he's just kind of a volatile character. I think that that's probably a closer comparison, but it's like both of those where it's a fragile thing. He could be off the team as quickly as he could be on it.
Yeah, and you know it's worth taking a risk. He's got the talent, so it'll be exciting to see how it goes.
All right, next one up here, running back JJ Taylor from Arizona, aka Deion Lewis 2.0, basically built the exact same way as Deion Lewis was. Very similar skill set in the way he plays the game as well. So you can see why the Patriots picked him up in undrafted free agency. He is only 5'5", 185. That's the big knock on him. Yeah. The other one is that he only ran 4.61 or 4.60. I can't remember which one it was. At the combine as well. So he doesn't have home run speed, but man, is he shifty, and he's got some great contact balance to run through guys as well.
Yeah. I mean, even though he didn't have a great 40 time, like, he had a lot of big plays.
I think it's his legs. I think he's so short that like it's hard for him to cover that much grass in the quick amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, he's an exciting player. I mean, he's somebody that, you know, in his best self would be like a nice replacement eventually for James White down the line. He's got enough skills. Like, he can catch the ball. He can run the ball. He can do a lot of different things well. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of this with him. I think he's an exciting player. Anytime you get a player that's that small and that's got any skill whatsoever, they like, you know, they sort of capture your imagination. So, you know, he's a, you know, and like I said, again, even without that 40 time, he's, you know, somebody that can make big plays and has made big plays all throughout his career at Arizona. So, he's somebody who's going to be fun to watch.
He definitely runs faster than he tested. I really think it is the length of his legs. It's just difficult for a guy that small to get up to, you know, in the 4.5s or in the 4.4s. But then you watch him play, and he does run through angles. He does make his speed felt and his presence felt in that regard, too. So I think it's there. The one thing we didn't mention about Thomas, and it applies to Taylor, too, is both these guys can return kicks, too. Kicks and punts. That's something that both of them are very good when they got the opportunity. Taylor especially has a ton of experience doing that. So I think that the things that stood out to me when I watched him, first of all, is the ability to be a pass catcher out of the backfield really stands out. Whether it's going out on kind of angle routes or option routes out of the backfield, going up against linebackers, getting into the flat and then creating with the ball in his hands afterwards, screens, running back screens, you can throw those to him as well and watch him create with it. He can do all those types of things, all the James White types of things, or all the Deion Lewis things that we saw him do when he was here. I think J.J. Taylor can replicate those things. The other thing is that he's more physical, I would say, than he is jitterbug. He's got this very good low center of gravity, and he's got great balance, and he's got great reactions to stack multiple moves together. So he'll break one tackle, and then the next guy will come and he'll break that tackle, and then he'll keep on stacking those moves one after the other to get up the field. So he's got that kind of quick juke, pivot, cut out of a tackle sort of skill set to him that we saw with Deion, where Deion Lewis, you know, guy comes screaming on a run blitz and he's dead to rights in the backfield. Deion Lewis was that type of guy that could jump cut out of that and make a positive play out of a negative one. And Taylor does those similar types of things as well. And then he can also lower his pads too and hit some guys over also and run through some guys and run over some guys in the open field. So a little bit more power than you would expect given his size, but I think it's because he is so low to the ground that he can have that center of gravity, and he's just always going to be the low player. So often is a struggle for defenders that are bigger or taller guys. They're always a little bit higher up. So I look at him and I see, you know, Deion Lewis, like I've been saying, maybe like a DJ Foster type if you want to be a little bit more realistic. But I think that he has all the skills that the Patriots typically look for in that third down pass catching role.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, it's going to be funny. This is another guy that I think that fans will sort of lock on to because this guy can be so exciting and stuff like that. And again, like you said, being that small can have its advantages. A, because, like, you know, these guys aren't used to hitting guys that big and they sort of don't get the proper leverage and stuff like that. In fact, this guy's always going to have the leverage when he's getting tackled by an NFL defensive player. So, I do think it'll be interesting. You know, I think, you know, he's got a very sort of varied skill set, and he can do a lot of different things with and without the football.
The only thing that I have a concern with him is he might get run over a little bit in pass protection.
Yeah.
You got Dante Hightower blitzing through the middle in training camp. I can see J.J. Taylor getting absolutely blown up. Yeah. And that's going to be a little bit of a concern. But I think the one thing that you can do to mask that is just have him go run a route, because then that takes that linebacker out of the blitz anyway. So there are ways around it, or there's ways to kind of scheme around it. But one thing when you watch him on tape is that pass protection is not – he's not going to really give you much there. He's kind of just going to be a speed bump on the way to the quarterback. So maybe he can be a big speed bump and you know, just provide a little bit of resistance there. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. Another player that I pegged as sort of an early favorite to make the team amongst these group of undrafted guys is Nick Coe out of Auburn. We did talk about him briefly in the last show. A guy, again, that not as bad as Jeff Thomas, but has his sort of character red flags in terms of buying in, being okay with his lack of playing time at Auburn last year, getting into a few blow-ups with coaches over that, just sort of unhappy, you know, around the block, or unhappy in the locker room, unhappy in the facility about his role, about his playing time, and also has a little bit of a reputation of falling asleep during meetings and just not being the most attentive guy. But then when you turn on the tape, he's actually a pretty skilled defensive end.
Yeah. When I watch him, I see I see a guy who I think can move a little bit around on the defensive line. He just has the body type for it, where you could put him on the edge, you could put him inside, you could, you know, put him over the nose. And then, you know, I think, you know, he, I now that was a pretty talented defensive line he was on. Right. At Auburn.
That was the biggest thing, was that he was just behind Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson and Cap Bryant, and he just didn't have a chance to play.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when he got out there, he showed he's a very physical guy, you know, a guy that's got decent athleticism. And, again, this is just sort of somebody I think they could move around a bit, and he could be successful in that role.
Agreed. At Auburn, they did stand him up a little bit in the two-point sets. He's 6'5", 280. So he's definitely got more of a defensive end build to him, and he's very long, almost 34-inch arms. So he's got a nice build to him for, like, a 3-4 end in the Patriots system, thinking more of along the lines of, like, a Chandler Jones-type body type than maybe a guy like a Trey Flowers or a more stout guy like a Lawrence Guy. This guy is a little bit more athletically built. I think he can play in pretty much any front or any alignment, though, and that gives them all sorts of versatility, and he certainly did that at Auburn, and they tend to do that with their defensive linemen anyway. I mean, I remember watching Marlon Davidson at 300 pounds standing up for them sometimes at outside linebacker, so they can definitely move those guys around, and he's got experience doing that. He's got long arms, right, and he's got that ability to really hold up at the point of the attack against the run and use his long arms to bench press guys off of him and create separation and then make tackles or at least reset the line of scrimmage. I think that's really where he's going to start with the Patriots, is if they really could use that third defensive end. They got Lawrence Guy, they got Bo Allen on the nose. Who's that third guy that's going to play on first down to stop the run? Because last year, when it had to be Adam Butler or it had to be Dedrick Wise, those guys got pushed around a bit at the point of attack, and the Patriots were really vulnerable. The Tennessee Titans, certainly in the wild card round, ran right at Dedrick Wise multiple times, knowing that he wasn't really a run down player. You know, he's more of a passing downs player. So I think Nick Coe has a chance to make the roster if he can be stout against the run, if he can prove that he can drop his anchor and hold it at the point of attack. That first and second down role on the defensive line is wide open. It's wide open for somebody to come take it. I think it's either going to be Coe or someone like Byron Cowart, maybe last year, their fifth round choice last year. But we have proven time and time again that that's not what Dedrick Wise and Adam Butler are built to do. Those guys are just not really developed into run players. They're really going to be predominantly just pass rushers. So give Coe a chance. He's got the body type. He's got the versatility. He certainly has enough power, I think, to hold up and functional strength to hold up. So I'm interested to see if they give him a chance in that role.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think, you know, this is another guy that I could have seen get drafted and not, you know.
He should have gotten drafted. It was all the off-field stuff, all the sleep during meetings, the tirades about his playing time. You know?
Which is bad. All that stuff's bad. You know,
he would have been like a third or fourth round pick if he was a clean prospect.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a nice value, I guess. But again, you know, and I don't know if this guy's necessarily like a, you know, a pass rusher or anything like that. And so, like what you were saying about, you know, him dropping anchor and being a really good run defender. I mean, I think he can definitely do that. He's just sort of got to get all the off the field stuff together.
He's too rigid for pass rush. He's a stiff guy. He's kind of segmented in his movements, and he doesn't have that great explosiveness off the ball either. So he can be a pocket pusher. You know, he can use his length and kind of lock out and push the pocket and bull rush. But if you're looking for a guy that's going to have sort of a flexibility to him to kind of rush the passer and stack moves together to rush the passer and beat tackles, then this is not your guy. You know, he's more of a pocket pushing presence. All right, I didn't know where to put Rashad Berry. I put him on defense for now. Tight end, linebacker. The Patriots are going to try to find a spot for this guy. He's clearly got some athletic upside to him, so he's an NFL-caliber athlete. I think the question with Rashad Berry is just going to be finding a spot for him to play.
Right. I, you know, I was sort of, like, looking up his stuff and trying to find, like, his game tape and stuff like that. And he's listed as a tight end, but this guy does not catch a lot of passes.
In his career, that was.
But he's a pretty imposing guy as a blocker, though, and you can see he moves well. He's a big dude, you know. He can be somebody who is a asset somewhere on the field. You know, I don't know what exactly he would be doing on defense. But he is a big, strong, athletic guy, and you know, he can be you know, if he stays on offense, he could be like a good blocking tight end. But I think it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where this guy lines up.
He was a very good blocking tight end for the Buckeyes. That's why I'm a little bit surprised that all this talk about him moving to outside linebacker is out there, because I actually think he could make the team as like a Dwayne Allen type. I think he really could as the third tight end with Asiasi and Keen, obviously, as locks. I think he has a chance. Maybe Matt Lacoste ends up making it over him, but I think he has a chance to be that third tight end as sort of just a blocking specialist, because he's got the ability to block from multiple spots, you know, in line, off the line of scrimmage, in the backfield even, on the goal line, short yardage. He's got some athleticism to him, so he can get out in front of plays and kind of be that lead blocker out on the perimeter if you want to throw a toss or a sweep or something like that. He has that ability to block in space screens. I saw him be the kind of the point man, point blocker on a bunch of screens as well for the Buckeyes. As a pass rusher, outside linebacker, he's completely raw, basically has no experience doing it. Pocket pusher, you know, guy that really is very raw with his hands and his technique. So all he's kind of doing out there is sort of trying to out-athlete the blocker in front of him. So he's a very much a project in that regard. So if that's the way that they're going with it, then it's all projection, and we're going to have to figure it out as we go. But as a tight end, I really do think that he has something there as a blocker that maybe they would like to kind of just see how it manifests itself at the NFL level.
Yeah, and I think that would be, you know, like a Belichick special, like, what do you make of this guy, you know? And I think he can definitely block like NFL defenders. Like, I think it's in his makeup. And again, like, this is a guy who's athletic, he's big, he's strong. Like, there's going to be a spot on the field for him somewhere in camp. And I'm with you. I think you go with what he's been doing the most, and that's as a blocking tight end.
All right, last one here. Deion Harris, linebacker from Arkansas. Basically, I call J.J. Taylor Deion Lewis 2.0. I would call Deion Harris a Landon Roberts 2.0.
Yeah.
Literally built the exact same way. 6 feet 234 for Harris. Roberts coming out with 6 feet 235. It's the same player. It's the same guy with the same strengths and weaknesses. It's so eerily similar that it's kind of eerie. It's just weird that it's how similar these two guys play the game.
Yeah, I like how Harris is sort of always in the right spot. You know, he's got sort of good football IQ for that. You know, a lot of the plays you watch him, he just sort of ends up where he's supposed to be. And in between the tackles, he's usually right there as the guy making the tackle. So I think he's somebody who could definitely fill that role. He's not somebody that's like that I want dropping back into coverage too much. You know, I don't think he's an exceptional athlete, but I think, you know, he knows where the ball is going to be and he gets there more often than not.
Yeah, he's a throwback old school type of linebacker, very compact guy. Even at 234, he packs a mean punch in the box. He's going to bring some physicality to it and hit some people. Three straight seasons of 100-plus tackles at Arkansas. So guy that definitely ate a lot of tackles. He has good eye discipline, too, to play through blockers. So he's always looking at the ball carrier. He's not looking at the guy blocking him, so he can kind of react and accordingly side to side to wherever the ball carrier is jumping or whichever gap he's jumping into. And he's got the ability to bring guys down on his own, despite being a little bit undersized. So he has all of the traits that the Patriots look for as that Landon Roberts early down Mike linebacker type that's just going to play the run. Now, he's not going to play on third down. He really shouldn't be asked to play in coverage all that much. He only ran a 4.69 in the 40, so he's definitely on the slower side of things, and he's a rigid mover. He's a very stiff guy. But I think the benefit of these types of players for the Patriots is that you go into the matchup, and maybe it's a specific matchup. So maybe against Tennessee, he plays a little bit more than he does against Kansas City, right? Because you got to break down Derrick Henry. The other thing is that, you know, maybe you have him on in your first down packages, but then he's not in on second and third down when they're more passing situations. So there's ways with substitutions, with scheme, to get him out of coverage. So I'm not too concerned about that. And once he sort of figures out a way to be a little bit more kind of just like a Landon, where you got to know where your spots are against play action. That's really the only thing that he's going to have to do against in coverage, is understanding route combinations, understanding where your spot drop in your zone is, and just getting there in time to be effective as a play action defender. Because if you play on first and second down, you're going to see a lot of play action. But if you can stop the run and play coverage and play action situations, then that's exactly what the Patriots need out of that spot. And he won't play over guys like Bentley or Hightower or anything like that, but he can be that sort of third inside backer in a rotation.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is sort of pretty good scouting on the Patriots' part, you know, because this is a type of player that can play for them. Yeah, he's got a fair
productive. Yeah, it's kind of surprising that he went undrafted.
Yeah, he's got a fair shot of, you know, if not making the roster, then making a good run for it, whatever. You know, this is a good, smart football player that in the middle of the defense will, you know, help you run defense.
It seems like they've all – I know people have their issues with guys like Alandon Roberts and stuff like that, but it seems like they do a really good job of finding those guys. So, yeah. You know, we're just going to ask them to do this one thing or one or two things against the run and be that kind of run-stuffing linebacker, and we're not going to worry about the coverage limitations because we're going to have safeties or we're going to have more athletic guys playing in passing situations anyways. So it's really just about making sure that – first and 10 doesn't become first and 10 again. Let's just make sure that first and 10, second and 7. And that's the type of guy that Harris can be. All right, give me your 30-second scouting report on Jake Burt from Boston College. I know you saw him.
Yeah, I actually saw him when he was in high school at St. John's Prep. You know, one of the best players in Massachusetts to come out that year. At BC, he had some injury issues, and that's really what held him back the most. He got injured a few times, but when he got healthy, he's a good blocking and catching tight end. Like that's the thing about these BC guys that are coming out at tight end, you know, lately they're very balanced. Like they can do a little bit of everything, and that's what Jake is. You know, he's a pretty good receiver, but he's also a very good blocker, and he's somebody that can, you know, get the job done in those capacities. And so, you know, obviously the injuries are something you're worried about, but, you know, right now he's healthy, it seems like. And, you know, he's somebody that can help you in the tight end room.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out with the undrafted guys. You know, at least one of these guys is making the team. Yeah. It's a matter of which one it is. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Is there anything that you want to tease or have going on that you want to talk about?
No, just, you know.
Hanging in there.
Yeah, quarantining.
We're surviving still.
Yeah.
I'm starting to go a little bit stir crazy. I'm okay and everything, but the walls are not quite caving in yet. But it's been a lot of inside time. Let's just over the last couple months. But on clnsmedia.com, I have something up about this actually. Topic of the UDFAs, best chance to make the roster as of right now. So you compare those two things together and look at the post as well for some film examples and that kind of stuff if you want. And then also I have a piece up on N'Keal Harry and what he's doing with his trainers, the Footwork King and Justin Allen, Dwayne Allen's brother. Really cool story. One of the more fun pieces I've gotten to write from some really great insight from two guys in the Footwork King and Justin Allen that really understand movement and understand how to stop and cut and create separation and do all that kind of stuff that really N'Keal Harry struggled with last year. So go check that out as well. And Adam and I will be back on the podcast. We'll try to get them in every 10 days to 2 weeks here in the off season until things pick up again. So we'll be back on the podcast shortly, doing something. We'll figure out something to do, some positional previews, talk some news, maybe do something along those lines. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.